Every 2 weeks, we welcome our next guest, Pamela Killeen, nutritional consultant. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am terrific. And I can't believe this news from just last week. According to new Canadian guidelines, Health Canada quietly released a few weeks ago that maybe you should start feeding your baby some meat, which probably shocked a lot of people.
I think so. I think a lot of people have been given a lot of bad advice for many, many years now on how to transition a young baby to eating real food. And unfortunately, a lot of parents out there have been feeding children a lot of grains, unfortunately, to wean them onto real foods, essentially. And now Health Canada is saying, I think we need to change the rules here and wean children on things like meat and poultry, because unfortunately, if we don't do that, then there's going to be some severe nutritional deficiencies that might ensue. And that includes even not getting enough iron in the diet. And iron is critical for brain development.
Now, obviously, the recommendation from not just La Leche League, but advocates will tell you, and most experts will agree that mother's milk, so breast milk for the first couple of months, almost exclusively. However, some women can't nurse, but for the most part, breast milk is best. But at what age do they recommend a transition occur where you start to supplement with food?
Yeah, about 6 months after, you know, basically at the age of 6 months, yes. But really, breastfeeding is recommended for about 6 months. If women cannot breastfeed, though, and of course Health Canada is not going to recommend this, but this would be the best thing to do if they can't get breast milk from, say, for example, another woman through La Leche League, and that would be providing the child with raw milk and adding a few extra ingredients into it, like cod liver oil or coconut oil, for example, so that they can get some more of those wonderful fatty acids. So, and unfortunately, most people can't get raw milk. In your area, I don't think there's any cow shares where people can get raw milk, which is unfortunate, but hopefully we'll see that situation change soon. But raw milk is fantastic as an alternative to not being able to provide breast milk.
Now, at 6 months, they recommend then, how much meat and how much do I have? Obviously, I'm not asking my child to start chewing steak. They don't have teeth. But what do I do? How much and what kind and how do you prepare it?
Well, essentially what they're saying is to start by pureeing it. And so pureeing meat, pureeing chicken, for example, and feeding the child more egg yolks. And you can actually cook the egg yolks in a boiled egg and separate out the yolk and start feeding that to the child if you'd like. And so it's pureeing that's a really easy way to get these foods into the child. And even if they don't have teeth, they should be able to still very well swallow the puree. So
yeah,
it's just a wonderful, I mean, it's finally we're getting some good advice, because unfortunately grain, if it's not properly prepared, is really, really irritating to the digestive tract. And unfortunately, a lot of kids have been fed pablum as this transition goes on in their life. And that's just not the optimal food. It's not going to give the brain the nutrients it needs to run on properly. So I'm really, really pleased to see these new recommendations. It's fantastic news for all babies in Canada right now.
You know, so going back to my three babies, raising them, and I remember thinking breastfeeding to start, and then I was always big on once they were beyond the point where my wife was going to breastfeed them, all right, well, we're going to have milk, or we'll put a little formula in it. And then I remember reading about that what babies need and what you need to do is the homogenized milk. You need full fat, because it's not only the energy that fat provides, because it's not that the baby's active, but the brain. The brain requires so much energy that this is, you can't, you know, there's no such thing as a fat baby, because all that extra energy that is not getting used by the brain gets stored. But that's a good sign that if the brain is not using it, but as well, the essential fatty acids that are present in dairy products, that are present in breast milk and in dairy products, that's what the brain needs. As we know,
cholesterol, let's not forget the cholesterol.
True enough.
And the brain absolutely needs cholesterol, not just from the body's ability to produce some cholesterol, but it needs cholesterol from outside sources. It needs dietary cholesterol, especially a baby's brain.
That's right. And then I got to thinking, if a baby needs it, why would we stop needing it?
Well, we shouldn't stop eating.
I know.
And that's why we're seeing so much dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and so on. So the demonization of cholesterol affects us at any age. And so we need to, like when Dr. Weston A. Price traveled around the world looking at a healthy culture, right, he could determine the characteristics of a healthy diet based on whether or not he saw these five variables in a culture. He wanted to see that couples were fertile, babies were healthy, that they weren't fussy and had colic, for example. He wanted to make sure there was no chronic disease, mental disorders in society, and he wanted to make sure that the senior citizens were still productive and healthy members of society. And so when he saw those variables, he said, oh, I want to know what they're eating. And of course, in these cultures, as a general rule of thumb, they were eating lots of cholesterol, lots of animal fat in their diet, and they didn't eat a lot of plant-based foods, and they sure as heck didn't have any of these newfangled foods that we see in the middle aisles of a grocery store. So we know that optimal health is achievable at any age, whether one is a child or a senior citizen. We know that Mother Nature hasn't messed up, and that we have been given some terrible, terrible dietary advice over the last several decades.
Now, what about the fact that there are people who have and protein allergies? So anaphylaxis, which affects, you know, we typically think of a peanut allergy, but I know someone who's deathly allergic to shellfish. You could have an egg allergy. That protein allergies, how worried should we be that we're introducing these proteins into an infant's diet and the reaction that it could? Or is it because we delay introducing these proteins, and maybe that's the reason why?
Well, I think that, you know, because women today, unfortunately, are on a low-fat diet, that they're compromised in terms of their health and their digestion even before pregnancy. And if they do, of course, conceive a child, unfortunately, that malnutrition, these nutritional imbalances essentially will adversely affect the fetus. So, yes, a lot of babies can be born sick because of the imbalances in the maternal nutrition. So, yes, you'll see potential problems with digestion in a very, very young baby. And I'm not suggesting that a young baby eat foods that they're allergic to, but I think what has to happen is we have to stop blaming the food. We have to stop blaming, for example, dairy and stop blaming eggs. Or even nuts, you know, we have to start saying, why is that child so weak that they can't handle these proteins? And so a lot of work has to be done in order to rebuild the digestion. And that's why things like bone broth are so incredibly healing. I mean, historically, through centuries of our evolution, we've known about the healing properties of bone broth, and very few people know about this. And I think I see a resurgence in this wisdom. So I see a lot of people now using bone broth on a daily basis, because they do recognize its many benefits. But that's just a very, you know, very simple approach to try and restore gut restore the digestive process. There's so many other things that need to be done to heal the gut, including by encouraging the growth of friendly bacteria. And that's where things like real yogurt, real kefir, perhaps even probiotics could help out. But certainly if people have access to raw milk, that would be also something that would be of tremendous benefit.
16 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen joins us on the program. And Pam, I'm going to segue a bit into another a food that they, and now I know you want to talk about how to make sure you properly prepare grains, but I think it leads into the big picture in terms of how many people have celiac disease and gluten intolerance. And in Scandinavia, they found by delaying the introduction of gluten to the digestive system, it led to problems later on down the line. That what we commonly did, you know, centuries or generations ago was, you know, introduce foods at the appropriate age, and people didn't have the digestive problems that they have now. And here, even though, you know, I know you're not a big fan of grains, but it's certainly you're not, don't ever consume grain. But in terms of gluten, I mean, here we're now saying, you know what, you should eat meat earlier. Now we're also saying, you know what, don't take gluten out of your diet early. Maybe there's a connection between the gluten intolerance we have later on as adults. And think about how many people you know who get diagnosed with celiac now. Anyways, I'll tell you about the study when we get back. It's from Scandinavia. It has some interesting insights. But feeding your child meat, it seems almost revolutionary for Health Canada to say this.
That's right. Yeah, it's good news.
17 minutes after 11 o'clock, back with more with Pam Colleen next on 610 CKTV. 22 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen joining us on the program. And Pam, there was a post this week on a science website, which was pretty interesting. And they talked about in 1982, Swedish authorities recommending holding off any gluten until a child was 6 months old. And between 1984 and 1996, celiac or gluten intolerance diagnosis skyrocketed. And then they thought, well, maybe, hold on a second. And then they stopped giving the recommendation and the numbers went down again. And it goes to, you know, we introduced meat at a younger age and then people held off on gluten's till an older age. And then we saw the gut have this, you know, bad reaction or this intolerance towards gluten's. What do you think of this?
Well, the real story has to do with how grains are prepared. That's the real story, and that's what they're not talking about or addressing in the research. Grain needs to be properly prepared, as do nuts and seeds. Grains, nuts, and seeds need to have some preparation time involved, some tremendous care before we consume them, because grains, nuts, and seeds have what are known as anti-nutrients in them. So they contain potentially things like gluten or trypsin inhibitors or phytic acid. All of these things are going to, you know, mess with your digestion, essentially. So you have to soak grains, nuts, and seeds. Generally, I'm just speaking very generally here, but you really should be soaking them, say, for example, overnight. And if you are going to plan on eating bread, that means that the grains should also be fermented and turned into something like our traditional sourdough bread. That way, some pre-digestion has taken place. It's much easier on your gut. Even research is showing that celiac patients might be able to handle a traditional sourdough bread, not a commercial one that is using yeast to still. You have to make sure it's a traditional sourdough bread that is using a culture, not yeast. And you can smell the sourness of the bread, and it's heavier and denser. And that's a traditional sourdough bread. That's what we should be eating. So, unfortunately, you know, when people are eating bread, for example, from the middle aisles of a grocery store, and they're using this fast-growing or this fast-rising yeast, that's not giving the grain the care and the attention that it needs in order to break down these anti-nutrients. So, yes, these commercial breads are extremely hard on the gut and cause all sorts of potential problems. And I think, Tom, you and I have talked about wheat belly with Dr. William Davis and how he's just seeing tremendous results at his practice where he removes gluten from people's diets, and he just sees amazing health benefits from his patients. And he also, as a cardiologist, understands the importance of eating enough animal fat in the diet. So there you go, another revolutionary doctor out there who's catching on to this dietary shift that society today so desperately needs.
Well, that leads me into my next question, and that is how prevalent with your clients or just in your circle, if you will, acquaintances, neighbors, people you talk to, in the attention they're paying and trying to get gluten out of their diet. Is this a fad, or you think more and more people are tuning in? Maybe this isn't the best thing for my stomach.
Oh, I think a lot of people are catching on. I mean, William Davis's book is a New York Times bestseller. He's just seeing tremendous feedback. He's got a blog, and people are just writing in all the time saying how much weight they've lost just by removing, wheat from their diet. But it's just not that. I mean, he's also, the reason why he's doing such great work is because he's not just saying, remove wheat from your diet. He's saying increase your intake of animal fat, because that's one of the things that has happened. We have displaced meat and replaced it with wheat, and that's what it's that displacement that has taken place that is also contributing to our obesity epidemic and all this chronic disease and mental disorders that we're seeing today.
If you had a choice, would you order a gluten-free product if you went and, let's say, you wanted to have a slice of pizza and they offered gluten-free? Do you think that's a good recommendation, not just for those who have a severe gluten intolerance, but would you order gluten-free products?
Well, no, I mean, gluten-free is kind of, it really is a fad or a gimmick. I just don't see a tremendous amount of benefit in that.
But just overall, your reduction of grains you would recommend more than just going gluten-free.
Yeah, you don't want to eat a lot of grain in your diet, because there's not just this honoring of wisdom, this dietary wisdom that our ancestors knew about what grains, nuts, and seeds needed to be soaked and possibly even fermented, depending on the recipe you're using. But, we can still overconsume grains, and that's the problem with the gluten-free movement and the specific carbohydrate diet and all these sorts of things is because people might say, I'm going to stop or reduce my consumption of wheat, but then they might eat too much millet or quinoa, for example. So there is that problem with that particular approach. So, yeah, I mean, I think the gluten-free approach has a lot of flaws to it.
Pam Killeen, always an education, always a pleasure. Thanks. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
That sounds great, Tom. Thanks so much.
Now, your website, pamkillen.com. I know we'll put a copy of this interview up, but you have past copies of all the interviews you do with us and all your other media interviews, because I got a note from Paul. Hey, Tom, how do I get a copy of this conversation? It's going to be on our website, but it's also on your website, pamkillen.com.
It's on pamkillen.com on the multimedia page, and I'm going to also put a link, Tom, to the article about nourishing a growing baby. There's some amazing information in there that's going to give you more detail about what we were talking about earlier, about how to transition a baby onto real food.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for that, Pam. Take care.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
28 minutes after 11 o'clock, that's Pam Killeen. For more information, you can go to her website, pamkillen.com, pamkillen.com. Missed it? Send me a note. Send me an email. Send me a text. I'll, just like I did with Paul, reply. I'll send you a reply as well, if you want that info.